Welcome to the Forging Honor Podcast. I'm Jonathan George.
And I'm Benjamin Jones. Here at The Forge, we explore what it means to live as Christian men. Along the way, we'll be doing challenges, building habits and character through action.
In today's episode, we talk about connectedness, rootedness, and supernatural faith. All right, it is challenge check-in time. As a reminder, challenges last for 6 weeks. That's a total of 42 days. They are simple daily tasks to grow us as men. This current challenge is to engage in a ritual every day and to highlight responsibility in your life in some way through that ritual. So there's some, we've been going back and forth a little bit, Banjo and I have, about how that responsibility is highlighted. So we're hoping to dig into that a little bit in today's episode. But before we do that, Banjo, how are you doing on your challenge?
So far, so good. This week has been a solid 4 out of 5. Had one day where I kind of intentionally flubbed and kind of intentionally said, "All right, I'm gonna see if I can go a whole day and not do an intentional ritual, and see how that goes, and see if there's kind of is there any tangible difference for my life, and what's the effect of that?" So that was interesting. Just noticing that it's kind of an unmooring feeling when you've been doing a ritual, when you've been doing some of these habits like really consistently over time. I think this is one of my best challenges that I've done in terms of just practice, just every day. The last, I guess, three, four weeks we've been doing now. It's probably been the most consistent that I've been. So to take a day off from a ritual, it was like, oh, something's missing here. So that was interesting. But overall, things are continuing pretty strong. How about for you?
That's really good. I love that word, unmooring. That's a great word. I love it. For me, let's see. I did not do a good count before we recorded. I'm going to say it was a bad week for me. I know that much. I went camping early in the week. So there were some things that could be considered rituals in that, but I wasn't doing them very intentionally necessarily. So not a great week for me. Not going to expound too much on that, other than I think it's interesting that you comment on that unmooring, because I haven't felt that necessarily when I haven't intentionally done a ritual. So I wonder how much of that is if I haven't been digging into them as much as I should be. So there could be some aspect of user error on that front. At any rate, I would like to learn more about, I know we talked about digging into some of the responsibility stuff, but you mentioned that word unmooring. I would like to hear some of your thoughts on kind of that connection point.
Yeah,
with ritual and your day to day.
Yeah, I'm glad we get to start there, because believe it or not, my wife almost never listens to our show. This is not one of her interests. It's not what she does. But I often talk about the show with her, and when I was explaining like the idea of the ritual challenge, she was like, "I don't know if I get this. I don't know if that makes a whole lot of sense." Maybe talking about some of the stuff that you have kind of been leaning on, JJ. But my wife has been reading The Winter of Our Discontent, which is a Steinbeck book. It's one of my favorite John Steinbeck books. So I'm a big Steinbeck fan. She was reading through this, and she came across a portion. And after she finished that, a portion in, let's see what chapter this is. One portion of Winter of Our Discontent, chapter 7, she like sent me a text. I was in the middle of work. I got this big, long text. And I was like, "What's going on? What's wrong?" And she was like, "No, I just got this. I just figured out what you meant by ritual." And she was reading Winter of Our Discontent, and she read this line from a character where the character says, they're talking about Washington, D.C., and they say, "It was such a restless place," Mrs. Baker said. "People moved before they had time to gather a set of habits or manners." And it's just a little quote, and more stuff happens in the chapter that would provide context. But just in isolation, I think it's worth thinking about. People moved before they had time to gather a set of habits or manners. And there's this idea that Steinbeck plays with a little bit there of like, in order to find a home, in order to make a home, there are certain patterns and rituals and habits that come with that place. And it doesn't really feel like home until you figured out what that is. My wife and I have felt that for ourselves as we've kind of moved to central Pennsylvania in the last couple of years. And really in maybe only the last 2 or 3 months have we really started to figure out some of our rituals. Like Sunday morning rituals of like, we have coffee together and we have breakfast together. And what does that look like? And what do we talk about? Who do we go to see on a Sunday afternoon? How do we spend that time? How do we spend our free time? What are the kind of the cultural customs of the area that we kind of fall into, stuff like that. And it's only kind of as we've been in this place for this extended period of time that we've come to form some of those rituals, and it's really started to feel like home for us. We're actually in the process of moving down the road a little bit from where we are now. And one of the things that we're already talking about is, okay, so what is the pattern of our life going to look like in the new apartment that we get set up in? What is that? What's it going to take for us to kind of make home there? And what are the habits that we're going to have to form? And so one of the things I've been thinking about with ritual as we practice this is, how am I making this a home? How am I making this place that I'm in safe, well gardened, maybe kind of Adam and Eve in the garden mandate of like taking dominion of the time and place where I'm in, and trying to steward well. And so some of those rituals, I think, have for me become a place of, okay, this is how I make a home of this space. This is my I'll use Robert Frost's quote about poetry, which I think I've probably used before, but his definition of poetry is a momentary stay against confusion. And I think a ritual is a way of taking kind of that ownership of a space and making a momentary stay against confusion. I don't know. Does that resonate with you? That the unmooring then comes from, if I don't do those rituals,
right,
then I kind of become disconnected.
All of that makes sense. Yes. Tracing a few ideas there. I think the one that jumps out at me is kind of the home life piece, almost like a rootedness is what you're going for.
Yeah.
And that I can connect to, I think, because at least for me, that's something my wife and I have valued very much for a long time. So like, we know on any given week what we're doing on any given night. It's not a question what I'm doing on Thursday 6 months from now. I know where I'm going to be. It's not a question, right? The only question is, what are we doing on maybe if something comes up, or a vacation, or on a Friday night? We don't know exactly what we're going to be doing, but I know I'm probably going to be seeing friends. On a Sunday afternoon, I know which of a few different families' houses I'll be at. And we've been that way for a very long time. So maybe there's a little bit with this challenge, with the ritual piece, of me kind of not seeing, I don't know how to put it. It's almost like I'm in the forest and I'm not seeing the trees almost. It's the opposite problem of missing the forest for the trees. Like I've kind of been doing it. And in my mind, that's just been my routine. That's just what I've done.
Yeah.
So I wonder if there's the piece of like the intentional doing, even if I don't feel like, man, I'm intentionally taking my time to, you know, evaluate this thing. And like, it's the, I don't know, but I definitely am very intentional about how I set up my week and how my family approaches that and our morning routine and evening routine, et cetera. So there's a lot there to unpack, or that could be unpacked. I would love to continue down kind of that train of thought of rootedness or connectedness. Kind of curious if you see possibilities there.
Yeah. Well, I've been doing a lot of reading this week about
good
this thought.
Read a lot.
Yeah. I try and do that, English major as I am, or was, I guess, once an English major, always an English major.
You technically have the degree. Yes.
Yeah. I own it.
I don't know if you're still, are you an English major, or are you an English?
I'm an English corporal.
Well, like pre, you know, you would say you're an English major, whether or not you have the degree. Like if you're in college,
I guess
before the
I guess
degree, I, you see what I'm saying? Like now you have the degree. Are you still an English major, or are you like, what are you, an English bachelor?
I majored in English.
You majored English. In English. Yeah. It's in the past now. Yeah. It's over.
It's past tense. Yeah. There was an article in I guess you'd say that it's a publication of the Orthodox Presbyterian Church, New Horizons. Carl Truman had an article called "The Thrill of Desecration," where he wrote about. I hope I'm summarizing this well, but he wrote about that we have this idea of in the modern world, we have this limitless kind of access to technology and to abilities, and we're kind of constantly being preached this message of like, live life without limits. Like just whatever you want to do, you can go do. If you want to change this about yourself, change that. You know, if you want to fly off and do this thing, go do that, because you have no limits. And Truman's point is we love to engage in desecration, in making something unsacred. And taking the sacred out of our life. And he compares this to disenchantment. He says that we live kind of disenchanted lives, but he prefers the idea of like desecration, because we're separated from our purpose. We're separated from our end. He says that mankind is made up of limits and ends. So we're made with particular finiteness, and we're also made with a particular end point. And so his part of his argument is for us to kind of take hold and to maybe appreciate and to acknowledge our limits and our ends. What is our finiteness, and what is our end goal? Kind of that that idea in the Westminster Catechism about what is man's chief end? To glorify God and to enjoy him forever. And then kind of the laying out of the rest of the catechism is kind of laying out our limits in some ways. And I think the idea that one of the things I've been thinking about with the ritual is that is a limited endeavor, if that makes sense. It's a limited idea where, you know, I try to think of one that's a little bit different than the ones we've been using so far, because we've been using the coffee one. I've been using my writing one. Maybe shaving. Maybe shaving is a good one that we haven't talked too much about. But you need – I mean, for me, I need to shave. And I need to do that with within my limits, which are both like kind of time, and I need to be careful, because if I'm not careful with my shaving, then I'm going to cut my face. And that's not particularly pleasant. So doing things that are within the limitations that I have, and then making that time the word that comes to mind is special, but I want a better word than that. More sacred, of like, God made me as a man, and because I am made as a man, I have hair coming out of my face. And because of that, I need to take ownership of that and need to take dominion of that space on my face. To get Dr. Seussian about it. And how do I do that? Do I do that? Am I doing that, I guess, is my question. Am I doing that in a way that honors God? And I think one of the things that helps me with the ritual, not to say that the ritual is the only way to do this, but what I like about the ritual is it's, it kind of says, all right, here's a thing that you have to do every day or every couple of days. How do you do this in a way that is pointing you back to Christ? Is pointing you back to worship, and how do you do that? And I don't know if that makes sense or if is getting at what you're talking about, dear listener. This is probably our latest recorded episode that I
like
can
late
think
at
of.
Night.
Yeah. Late at night, yeah. I think we're setting a record for late night recording. So I can feel my mind wandering into restless dreams.
You do seem a little tired. Just kind of going back to the beginning of that stream of thought with the limits and the ends. And you go through, so you go through from that, and then you get to, what does it mean to take dominion over your particular space?
Right.
So it sounds like you're connecting. We have limits. So there's a limit to what our space is. There's right. a limit to what we can take dominion over. And yet one of our ends, one of our many ends, obviously we are to glorify God and enjoy him forever, but one of his direct commands to us in that, and a way we can fulfill that, is by taking dominion.
Right.
So within that limit and to that end, obviously there are other almost sub ends, as it were, like I'm using quotations here, sub ends sure. to the primary end of glorifying God and enjoying him forever. Other sub ends might be, you know, visiting orphans and widows in their distress.
Totally.
Or, yep. or, you know, caring for ministers in the church, you know, other things that you can do, but taking dominion of your personal space is one of them. So is that a fair, summary of kind of your train of thought there?
Yeah. Just with the amendment that like that we can make that meaningful, like that there right. can be purpose well, in that, which is what you're saying.
Like, do we make that meaningful, or is it meaningful because it is glorifying to God?
Oh, that's a good, yeah. One should say that, since God has given it to us to do, it is meaningful.
Right.
And we're either recognizing that or ignoring that fact.
Because I think if we say something like, here's what I have and I have to make my own meaning. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly. You see where that's going.
That. Yeah. I'm gonna, yeah.
Yeah. And I think because that goes directly against that train of thought. You said it was from Carl Truman, right?
Right.
Who's saying, you know, we, in a disenchanted world, in a world where we've broken away from that, we have to make our own meaning, right?
Right. And particularly a desecrated world, we have to make our own holiness.
Which is a great word, desecrated.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're right. We don't want to say that we're making our own holiness. We want to say that desiring the holiness of God. That
yes,
that
I think that's ultimately fair. And then there's on that meaning point. I think this is one of the reasons I've struggled a bit with the ritual piece. Is it feels like I'm trying to somehow make meaning out of something in my life that already exists.
Yeah, yeah. We don't want to say that we derive our own meaning. We make our own meaning. We want to say that the meaning that we have, we receive from God, or we only yes. are able to make yes. sense of our meaning from how God gives us meaning. But there's a lot of freedom within that. I think this. I'll read just a brief bit of Carl Truman's article here because I think it's enlightening. He says the second aspect is our freedom. Something critical to being human. A brief comparison to animals helps clarify the point. Foxes, for example, kill chickens, but place a chicken in the presence of a human being and the outcome is not typically predictable in advance. Will the person kill it and eat it, release it into the wild, or keep it for producing eggs? With a fox, there is no such doubt. Unlike other creatures, therefore, we are free. Further created in God's image, we act freely in a way that carries moral significance. I think, as an aside, I think that's a very interesting point. The fox never asks whether killing the chicken is a good thing because it is for him a purely instinctive matter. For us, our treatment of the chicken can take into account a whole host of other factors. Who owns the chicken? What future consequence would killing it carry? These shape our behavior towards this act. So I think it's just interesting to think about these things in connection with ritual. You know, we're not manufacturing meaning when we talk about ritual, and I don't think we're even manufacturing responsibility so much, or manufacturing a sense of home. I think it's at its best. Maybe what ritual does is kind of an acknowledgement of God's gift to us, an acknowledgement of our finitude and our freedom. And our gifts and abilities to those ends, and saying, okay, since I've been given a limit and I've been given an end and I have this freedom, what do I do with those?
Right, right.
So
I think it's interesting, even in the language, you know, we take responsibility,
right?
Right, similar to take dominion,
right?
And just that language. So rather than making meaning, you know, we are. where in the process of taking responsibility, in the process of performing that ritual.
You also kind of receive responsibility too.
Yes. Well,
that's given to you.
It can be given to you, right? To whom much is given, much is expected is kind of a phrase that comes to mind. But I think it's interesting that we are called to go and do that. And, you know, you and I are exploring this through the process of ritual here, which, you know, I think it's definitely been like, it's just felt more abstract for me digging into this.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't think that's necessarily a problem. I think it's more a matter of, is that because I'm not seeing the meaning in it? Or is it because I have felt like, I think it might be because I have felt like I've had to make meaning in it. Because sure. So much of the conversation surrounding ritual, at least in modern society, is, you know, let's do this ritual to make it meaningful.
Right, right.
And that gets, I think of...
just kind of like sprinkle the ritual on and then it's going to be meaningful. Yeah.
Well, it's like the, who's the lady that cleans the... We did a challenge.
Marie Kondo.
Yeah, Marie Kondo. Like, we did a challenge involving some of her stuff like a year ago. And one of the things that always kind of felt odd to me with her is we're only providing meaning to those objects that she's talking about insofar as we take joy in those things. So all the meaning is simply prescribed by us. There's no meaning in and of the object itself. Right.
Right.
And in that way, where I think that kind of twists things versus a Christian view of the world is everything has some value, some meaning. It's all been created by God. Now, some object's value might simply be that God gave it to us as a means to an end, right? There are some foods that taste a lot better than other foods. And we thank God that he's given us the foods that they don't necessarily taste as great, but they can be very sustaining and be very good for us in the long run. In the same way, there are certain tools that we as humans have created using our God-gifted abilities. Those tools, some are just much more utilitarian than others. You know, a hammer's for hitting nails, right? There's not much more meaning to it than that. You don't look at a hammer and go, oh man, look at the innate, I don't even know. Like,
the,
I can't even
the see beauty of the hammer. Yeah.
Versus there are pieces of art that exist. So like we took cars and some people turned them into pieces of art. So they added an extra layer of meaning. So did they create that meaning? Or did that come from the fact that there was a creative mind behind it? Did the car create its own meaning, or is there a creative mind behind it? In the same way, do we create our own meaning, or is there a creative mind behind us?
Right. And we could get into some fun, like, ideas of you know, Platonic ideals here, where, right. Like, is there a, you know, is there a Platonic ideal of a car? Like, when we, you know, you can make a car that's strictly utilitarian, that's strictly,
I mean, a very efficient. Basic pickup truck. Like, there's a reason I have a small body pickup.
It's a utility.
I think it looks cool because I happen to like small body pickups, but like not everybody think, like a lot of people look at that and go, well, it's going to get lumber from Home Depot or Lowe's to your house. And
right.
That's what it's there for.
And I think one point I'd like to make, and because there is an abstract quality to this conversation, but I think it's important to have it. And I think it's appropriate that this has turned into a pretty, you know, late night conversation, because this feels very much like if I can get meta for a second, it feels very much like a college dorm room conversation that we might have had, you know, 3 a.m.
A little bit, yeah.
But I think there is purpose.
Which, if anyone's listening to this, it is not 3 a.m.
Not yet. Not yet. We're getting there, but not yet. I think there is purpose to those conversations. I think there is I think it's really easy in our formation of habits. And again, I want to reiterate that I think forming habits is valuable and important and essential. But I think it's easy in our kind of self-help culture that we have to kind of like have the sense that the purpose of a self-help book is to kind of get us to this like most efficient human being. And that we're just going to be human beings that kind of run without problems. Like that's the end goal, I feel like, of a lot of advice. And I don't find that a particularly, I don't find that a resonant view of humanity. There's not a lot of complexity to it and not a lot of helpfulness to it.
Totally.
And I think the idea of ritual here, I like what you said about the car, because there is like, you can have a car that is, you know, that runs well, that gets you from point A to point B, and has great gas mileage, that is not beautiful. And there's something of value in figuring out what does it mean to make something that is beautiful and that is admirable and that kind of thing. And to me, when I think about some of these habits that we've formed and we talked about, you know, I think of like our exercise challenge that we did not long ago. I think there is like part of our argument for that was like, we get to look beautiful a little bit. And like, that's one of the, like when the human body is in motion, it's not just utilitarian. It's not just going from A to B. It actually has some beauty to it. It has some grace to it.
Right.
To varying degrees. My mom once compared my running form to Fred Flintstone. So, you know, I'm not exactly like the picture of poetry in motion.
You aspire to.
I aspire to things like Yogi Bear and Daffy Duck. You know, like those are
the next level up.
So, but anyway, just to say, like,
totally.
I think to me, the value of the ritual is to say, okay, like, your life is meaningful, and even this ordinary moment can be full of beauty. I think there is, if I can say, a practical application to that. I don't know. Maybe sure. Maybe you disagree. Well, or tweak.
I think a piece of the application is it's only meaningful insofar as you recognize that meaning is coming directly from whatever meaning exists that God has put there.
Right. It's not an arbitrary meaning.
It's not arbitrary. So like, if you're like, and this is where I think it's tough with like, I'm going to shave for my ritual. Like, what meaning has God put into shaving? And you kind of dug into it a little bit with earlier talking about this dominion on your face, but like you kind of have to think through that a little more, and making that connection between, all right, here's this responsibility for me. It's less about that and this dominion of my face thing, and more about, okay, I think there's a representation here in a transition in my day. Like when I wake up, I'm groggy. I'm not ready for my day. Maybe I'm being a bit of a grouch. But by the time I'm done shaving, it's usually, all right, I can face my day. I can go out, take care of my family. And there's meaning in that. It's not this, and maybe that's more, in my mind, that's the meaning I want from ritual sometimes. It's not so much like I'm making this cup of coffee and man, is it this beautiful cup of coffee? And wow, God is giving me this beautiful cup of coffee. It's I'm making this cup of coffee and yes, I enjoy this cup of coffee, but it allows me to do something. Like it takes me to that next step.
Yeah.
So there's that going on. Also, you mentioned the efficiency of self-help. And on the one hand, I agree with you. Like, I do think we have a problem with, you know, we're always trying to optimize, right? There are these people, there are literally like biohackers out there, and I'm using air quotes here, biohackers. Like, they're doing all these crazy supplement things to like reverse aging and stuff. You see them pop up on X, Twitter, whatever you call it. And so I do think like what they're doing there, it's very like egotistical sometimes.
Right.
I'm going to be the most efficient human ever. It's very utilitarian. And I would not describe myself as utilitarian. On the other hand, there is a beauty in discovering a better way of doing things. I watched this excellent YouTube video. I don't know. It stuck with me. It was like maybe it was only a year ago. I don't know. There's a guy, he's a carpenter building a deck, and it was just a voiceover of him as he builds this deck slowly. It's a very slow video. And he's just talking about how there's a beauty in, as he does his work, he slowly gets more efficient. He slowly finds a better way of doing something, like, oh, if I cut it this way, instead of this way, it would be faster. Or I could do this thing. And there's a process to that. He didn't start with a manual of, here's how to be the most efficient carpenter. He started with, all right, here's a design. I'm going to build this thing. And along the way, I'm going to learn some of these processes. And for him, I liked that approach, because for him, it was this approach of, I do have an end goal in mind. I have my limits of what materials and what tools I have. But in between, there is a process of, he wants to get better at it. So at the very beginning, he's moving slowly. About, you know, he says about a quarter way through, he started to get a little more efficient because he figured out what particular, he started to get the feel of the wood he was using. He started to get the feel of, like, he's building a particular deck that he hasn't built before. So he has to understand the nuances of that. So I do think there that, you know, kind of based on that example, that there is a beauty in that growing of efficiency. Like if you spend every day in the same routine for the rest of your life and you never improved it, I might ask, how seriously are you thinking about it? Right? There's evidence there of that. So it's kind of this, it always goes back to me, like there's this balance, right? There's this pull and this tug of either side. Like you could just go all in on the efficiency, or you could go all in, right, and take my time. And instead of being a carpenter, I'm going to be a true craftsman and woodworker and just only ever take my time and only create beautiful things.
I like that word, craftsman. Yeah. I think there's we kind of implied that with the forging element of Forging Honor. Yep. I think that was always kind of an element of the show, is we want to be craftsmen in the sense of, like, if our calling, if our craft is masculinity, and that's a limit that we have.
Absolutely.
I imagine a portion of this of our listenership has, that's a limit we acknowledge. And the premise of the show is, okay, so what does that mean? Like, how do we take ownership of that? How do we take responsibility of that? And that's going to look different. You know, like you said, you know, every deck is different. Every guy is different. So there's going to be warpings and, you know, different grain of every bit of that. But there's going to be beauty in every bit of that too. And there's going to be the image of God and all of that. Another great video for folks to check out, by the way, you were talking about deck building. James Hoffman is a coffee connoisseur on YouTube. He did a great video a couple of weeks ago called "What Does a Great Cup of Coffee Taste Like?" And he did just a magnificent job in kind of explaining what that's like. Highly recommend checking that out for folks.
I do love that idea of the craftsman.
Yeah.
And because I think it strides the balance a little bit between being just the artist, because as much as I love art and I love beautiful art, if all of your life is only about the art of it, and you're never kind of letting rubber meet the road a little bit. If you're only ever building the beautiful car, but you're never driving it,
right?
I feel like there's a little bit of missing the point there. If you're always painting, it's like have you read Leaf by Niggle?
I have, a long time ago, so I forget large portions of it.
Yeah, long story short, I won't spoil the ending, but he spends forever working on the same painting. He's painting and painting, and he's painting. He's just taking forever on it, and it's this whole, like, that's kind of the problem presented, is if you're spending forever working on the creation of this thing and you're never letting it be displayed, you're never finishing it, that's going to be an issue. And, like, that's why, you know, if you're going to build a deck, like, it has to be finished. Someone has to walk on it.
Right.
But in the process, you could make it a beautiful deck. You can do a good job, but it has to be finished. And then you have to move on to the next one.
One thing I want to toss in here, and this is also from the same New Horizons publication. This is an article by Craig Troxell, Dr. Craig Troxell, called "The Habits of the Heart," where he's been talking about habits, actually spiritual habits, practical habits, and he makes this point at the end about supernatural faith. Our supernatural life. And he says, quote, "All this serves to accent the indispensable role of faith in sanctification. The very nature of God's work in transforming our hearts assumes what is the lifeblood of Christianity, supernaturalism. The spiritual blessings that we lay hold of by faith are not from this world. It is an alien word that enters us and reforms us. It is the Spirit of God who indwells us and transforms us. The change that befits the kingdom of God is one born of a transcendent power that comes to dethrone the power of sin and the evil one. It comes to signal the beauty of an eternal holiness. Such truths invigorate our faith in Christ. Every saving benefit of Christ can only be received received by faith, and there is no spiritual blessing received without it, whether for justification or for sanctification. He goes on to say, we do change by caring about our habits, but we become holy by the supernatural and transformative work of God's Spirit and Word in our hearts. I think that's really interesting and just something for us to think about as folks who are interested in talking about like habit and change. Like those are two important ideas for us. Like we want to improve our habits. We think we should change our habits as a result of what we believe. That's pretty key. But we do believe that we become holy through the saving work of the Holy Spirit. And I just think that's interesting as we're talking about ritual. We're not making something holy by our actions. But maybe what we're doing is we're recognizing the holiness that we have in Christ. Maybe that's just a late night thought. Maybe it's not grounded too much in reality, but I think it's worth thinking about. And I thought it was a striking point from Pastor Troxell.
Summarize that one more time.
I'll just read the last line again, because I think it's the key part. We do change by caring about our habits, but we become holy by the supernatural and transformative work of God's Spirit and Word in our hearts.
Right.
So I guess the main summary in terms of ritual is, you know, we want to change our habits in such a way that we're thinking about everything that we're doing, or we're recognizing that God providentially has brought us to this thing. Providentially, He's given us these limits and these ends, and so we want to glorify Him in that. But we also want to recognize that we're not making ourselves or our home holy by our own actions. That's a supernatural change that's occurring by the Holy Spirit, by the Word. So,
I like that. It almost sounds like there's a piece of this where with ritual, you are, like when you first suggested this idea of ritual, it's almost like there's, you want to approach these regular habits and just simply be aware of the Spirit working through these habits.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. To the extent that, you know, when I tossed the idea of ritual out, the main thing I was thinking about was, we were talking about responsibility, because we were talking about athletics and we were talking about, well, what we want to do with being, exercises, we want to take responsibility of our body. We want to be responsible with our physicality. And I was interested in that idea and maybe wanted to say, okay, how far can we push that? Like how
interesting
can we take that to other things? How can we practice that idea of I'm going to be responsible? And the thing that popped in my head was ritual. Just thinking about different rituals that I've seen and have observed or have studied about, and thinking about, well, those are places where if we're doing them poorly, if we do a ritual poorly, then we're just like, well, if, you know, I'm going to sprinkle this on here and that's, you know, it's just what we do. I was at a graduation ceremony tonight and I thought, how many times do we go to a graduation ceremony and it's just, well, you know, let's run it through. This is what we do. It's a ritual. But how much more meaningful are those times where you are going through that ceremony and it means something? You savor it, you know, you take all of the juice out of it, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Well, very good. We are close on our time, but I really enjoyed this. This has given me a lot to think about.
Yeah, this has maybe been a mellow marinade. Listener, thanks for hanging in there with our kind of lo-fi vibe tonight.
Lo-fi, we're doing a lo-fi podcast. I like it. Very good. I've enjoyed this, and I'm looking forward to the next conversation that we could have. We're coming near to the end of this challenge, so I have a little more to fit in here and talk about, but
We'll wrap it up next week.
In the meantime, continue on in your daily rituals and let the spirit work through them.
This has been the Forging Honor Podcast. Music and production is by Elliot George. For more information about what we do or to learn how to get involved, visit our website at forginghonor.com.
If you enjoyed the show, make sure to like, subscribe, and give us a rating to bring others into the Forging Honor journey. On our website, you'll find information about our Patreon, articles, as well as links to the many resources we mention in the show.
Thanks for taking the time with us today. We hope you'll take up the work alongside us and join us in the task of Forging Honor. We'll see you next time.